The Pit and the Pendulum. I was sick, sick unto death with that long agony. Finally, they untied me, and I was allowed to sit. Then I felt that my senses were leaving me. The sentence, the dreaded sentence of death, was the last clear sound which reached my ears. After that, the voices of the judges seemed to come together in one dreamy hum. This was only for a brief period, for soon I heard no more. Yet, for a while, I saw. But what a sight! I saw the lips of the black-robed judges. They appeared to me white, whiter than the paper upon which I write these words, and the lips were thin, with a grim firmness. I saw that the words of my fate were still coming from those lips. I saw them say the syllables of my name. And I shuddered because I heard no sound. And then my vision fell upon the 7 tall candles upon the table. At first, they seemed like slim white angels who would save me. Then a deadly sickness came over me. And the candles seemed like ghosts with heads of flame that would be of no help. Suddenly a thought came to me, like a rich musical note. What sweet rest there must be in the grave. The thought came gently and quietly. But just as my spirit came to accept it, the figures of the judges disappeared as if by magic. The tall candles sank into nothingness, and their flames went out completely. Then silence and stillness and night were my world. I swooned, but I will not say that I passed out. I was not entirely awake, nor entirely unconscious. Shadows of memory tell me of tall figures that lifted and carried me in silence down to a great depth. They also tell of a horrible feeling in my heart, an unnatural stillness. After this, I remember a flatness and dampness. And then all is madness. The madness of a memory that wishes to forget forbidden things. Suddenly, movement and sound came rushing back to me. It was the movement of the heart, and in my ears the sound of its beating. Then there was a pause in which all was blank. Then again sound, movement, and touch, a tingling feeling throughout my body. Then suddenly thought and terror, and a great effort to understand my true state. Finally, there was full memory of the trial. There was memory of the judges, of the sentence, of the sickness, and of the swoon. So far, I had not opened my eyes. I felt that I was lying upon my back, untied. I reached out my hand, and it fell upon something damp and hard. I remained that way for many minutes. I tried to imagine where I could be. I longed to, but dared not, use my eyes. I dreaded that first glance at the objects around me. It was not that I was afraid to look upon horrible things. I was afraid that there would be nothing to see. Finally, with a desperate heart, I quickly opened my eyes. My worst thoughts came true. The blackness of night surrounded me. I struggled for breath. I still lay quietly and tried to think. I thought once more of the judges. I tried to figure out my real condition. The sentence had been passed. It seemed to me that a very long period of time had since gone by. Yet not for a moment did I think I was actually dead. But where and in what state was I? Had I been taken back to my dungeon to await execution? Yet that could not be. My dungeon, like all the cells of the condemned at Toledo, had stone floors and small windows to let in some light. A horrible idea suddenly caused the blood to rush upon my heart. For a brief period, I lost all my senses again. When I recovered, I jumped to my feet, shaking all over. I thrust my arms wildly above and around me in all directions. I felt nothing, yet I dreaded to move a step. I was afraid I would feel the walls of a tomb. Large, cold beads of sweat burst out upon my forehead. I could no longer stand the suspense. I moved forward slowly with my arms in front of me, my eyes strained in the hope of catching some small ray of light. I walked several paces, but still all was empty and black. I breathed a bit easier. It seemed clear that mine was not, at least, the most horrible of fates. I continued to step carefully onward. Now my mind recalled a thousand rumors of the horrors of Toledo. Of the dungeons there had been strange tales told. I had always believed them to be fables, yet they were strange and too horrible to repeat except in a whisper. Was I left to die of starvation in this underground world of darkness? Or what fate, perhaps even more fearful, awaited me? The result I knew would be death, and a bitter one. I knew my judges too well to doubt that. The method and the hour were all that were unknown to me. My outstretched hands finally came upon a wall. It was made of stone, very smooth, slimy, and cold. I followed it carefully, but this gave me no way of figuring out the total space of my dungeon. I might cover the entire area and return to where I set out without knowing it. So I looked for the knife that had been in my pocket when I was led before the court, but it was gone. My clothes had been replaced by a robe of coarse material. I had wanted to force the knife into some crack in the wall to mark where I had started from. Instead, I tore off a piece of cloth from my robe. Then I placed it against the wall. I would have to come across this rag when I made a complete trip around the cell. So, at least, I thought. But I had not counted upon the size of the dungeon, or my own weakness. The ground was damp and slippery. I staggered on for some time, when I stumbled and fell. I was so tired that I was forced to stay where I fell, and sleep soon overtook me. When I woke up, I stretched out my arm and found a loaf of bread and a pitcher of water beside me. I didn't even think about it. I just ate and drank as fast as I could. A bit later, I continued my walk around the dungeon. After a while, I finally came upon the cloth I had placed near the wall. Up until my fall, I had counted 52 steps. Now I counted another 48 steps until I reached the rag. There were then 100 steps in all. Figuring 2 steps for each yard, I figured the dungeon to be about 50 yards around. However, I had come across many angles in the wall, so I couldn't guess the shape of the vault. There was no hope in learning more about my dungeon. But I was still curious, and that made me continue. I moved away from the wall and decided to cross the area of the cell. At first, I moved very carefully, for the floor, which seemed solid, was covered with slime. Finally, I found my courage and began to step firmly. I tried to walk in as straight a line as possible. I advanced about 10 or 12 steps forward. Then, the piece of cloth I had torn from my robe became tangled between my legs. I stepped on it and fell down hard on my face. When I fell, I was at first confused. I did not understand the situation. A few seconds later, while I still lay face down, I became aware of it. It was this. My chin rested upon the floor of the prison, but my lips and the upper part of my head, although lower than the chin, touched nothing. At the same time, my forehead seemed bathed in a damp vapor. I put my arms forward. I found that I had fallen at the very edge of a circular pit. Of course, I had no way of knowing how deep or wide this pit was. I felt below the edge and pulled a small stone loose. Then I let it fall into the pit. For many seconds, it bounced off the sides before it finally plunged into the water. Just then, I heard a sound from above. It sounded like a quick opening and closing of a door overhead. At the same moment, a faint light flashed through the gloom. Then, just as suddenly, it faded away. I saw clearly the doom which had been prepared for me. I was grateful for the timely accident that had helped me escape it. Another step, and the world would not have seen me again. I had been given a choice of death. I could have a sudden death by dropping into the pit, or die a slower, more horrible death. Shaking all over, I felt my way back to the wall. I made up my mind to die there rather than risk the terrors of the pit. In another state of mind, I might have decided to end it all at once, but now I was a coward, and I could not forget what I had read of these pits. Sudden death was not part of the horrible plan behind them. I remained awake for many long hours, but finally I fell asleep again. When I awoke, I found by my side, as before, a loaf of bread and a pitcher of water. I felt a burning thirst, so I quickly emptied the pitcher. It must have been drugged, for I felt very sleepy at once. A deep sleep fell upon me. How long it lasted, I do not know. But when I opened my eyes again, I could see the objects around me. There was also a strange glow. I could not figure out where it came from at first. I had been greatly mistaken about the size of my prison. It was not more than 25 yards around. The reason for my mistake finally flashed upon me. I had at first counted 52 steps up to the time when I fell. I then must have been within a step or two of the piece of cloth. In fact, I had nearly completed a trip around the entire vault. I then slept. Upon waking, I must have repeated the same steps. So I had supposed the trip around was nearly double what it really was. I had been fooled, too, in regard to the shape of the dungeon. In feeling my way around, I had found many angles, so I thought the shape of the place was quite unusual. The effect of total darkness upon someone just waking up is very strong. The angles were just slight grooves. The general shape of the prison was square. I was also mistaken about the walls. What I had taken to be stone was actually iron or some other metal in huge plates. On the walls were crudely painted pictures of devils in skeleton forms and scary poses. In the center of the prison was the round pit from which I had escaped. All this I saw with much effort, for my condition had greatly changed while I was asleep. I now lay upon my back, stretched out on a low wooden framework. I was tied tightly to it by a long strap. It passed around and around my limbs and body. Only my head and left arm were somewhat free. This allowed me, with great effort, to take some food from a dish that lay beside me. I saw, to my horror, that the pitcher of water had been removed. I say to my horror because I was very thirsty. The cause of this appeared to be the salty meat in the dish, and it was clear that my persecutors had planned this. Looking upward, I saw the ceiling of my prison. It was some 30 or 40 feet overhead. It was built much as the side walls were. In one of its panels, a figure caught my attention. It was the painted figure of Time, as he is usually seen, except he was not holding a scythe. Instead, he held what appeared to be a huge pendulum, such as we see on old clocks. There was something about the pendulum that caused me to look at it more closely. When I gazed directly up at it, I thought I saw it move. A moment later, I knew that it had moved. Its sweep was brief and slow. I watched it for some minutes in wonder. Finally, I got tired of its dull movements. I turned my attention to the other objects in the cell. A slight noise caught my attention. Looking at the floor, I noticed several huge rats running about. They had come from the well, which lay just within view to my right. Even as I watched, they came up in large numbers. They were drawn by the smell of the meat. I finally managed to scare them away. A half hour, or perhaps even an hour, went by. Then once again I looked upward. What I saw amazed me. The sweep of the pendulum had increased by almost a yard. As a natural result, its speed was also much greater. But what mainly disturbed me was the idea that it was noticeably lower. I now saw, in horror, that its lower part was a curved edge made of glittering steel. This part was about a foot in length from tip to tip. The ends tapered and pointed upward, and the edge seemed as sharp as a razor. It appeared heavy and was attached to a thick rod of brass. The whole thing hissed as it swung through the air. I no longer wondered about the doom prepared for me. My discovery of the pit had become known to my persecutors. The horrors of the pit had been saved for someone, like myself, who so boldly disobeyed them. The pit was rumored to be the most horrible of all their punishments. I had avoided falling into the pit by a simple accident. I knew that surprise was an important part of the plan. Having failed to fall in on my own, there was no plan to throw me in. Therefore, a different and milder form of death was in store for me. Milder. I half smiled in my agony as I thought of using such a word. Why bother to tell of the long, long hours of horror that followed? I counted the rushing vibrations of the steel, inch by inch, line by line. Days passed. It might have been that many days passed. The pendulum swept so close to me that I felt it fan me with its movement. The smell of the sharp steel forced itself into my nose. I prayed for its more speedy descent. I grew mad. I struggled to force myself upward against the sweep of the fearful blade. And then I fell suddenly calm. I lay smiling at the glittering death, as a child at some rare toy. There was another period of passing out. It might have been brief, for when I came to, there had been no further drop of the pendulum. Then again, it might have been long. I knew there were demons who took note of my condition. They could have stopped the pendulum at their pleasure while I was asleep. I felt sick and weak. It felt as though I had gone without eating for a long time. With a painful effort, I reached out with my left arm as far as I could. I found a piece of food that had been spared by the rats. I put the food to my lips, and a half-formed thought rushed to my mind. It was a thought of joy, of hope. Yet what business had I with hope? It was, as I say, a half-formed thought. Suddenly it faded. I struggled to bring it back. My long suffering had almost destroyed my ordinary powers of mind. The sweep of the pendulum was at right angles to my body. I saw that the blade was set to cross the area of my heart. It would touch the very edges of my robe. Then it would return to repeat the movement again and again. This fraying of my robe would be all that it would do for several minutes. I concentrated hard on this thought. It was as if, by so doing, I could stop here the descent of the steel. I forced myself to think about the sound the pendulum would make as it passed across the robe. I thought about this until my teeth were on edge. Down, down it came, to the right, to the left. Far and wide it swept. Down to my heart it came with the steady pace of a tiger. I laughed and howled wildly. Down it continued to come. It swept within 3 inches of my chest. I struggled violently to free my left arm. It was free only from the elbow to the hand. If only I could have broken the bands above the elbow. I would have grabbed and tried to stop the pendulum. I might as well have tried to stop an avalanche. Still further down it came. I gasped and struggled at each movement. Although death would have been a relief, oh, how unspeakable. I saw that 10 or 12 sweeps would bring the steel in contact with my robe. When I noticed this, my spirit was suddenly filled with a calmness. For the first time during many hours, perhaps days, I thought. It now came to me that the band that held me down was all one piece. The first stroke of the blade on any part of the band would break it. Then it might be unwound from my body with my left hand. But how fearfully close the blade would be. The smallest movement upward of my body would be deadly. Was it possible that my persecutors had not thought of this? Was it possible that the band crossed my chest in the track of the pendulum? I lifted my head to view my breast. The band passed over my limbs and body in all directions, except in the path of the pendulum. I dropped my head back again. Then, into my mind flashed the rest of the half-formed thought I mentioned earlier. The whole thought was now present. It was weak, hardly sane, hardly clear, but still whole. For many hours, the area around which I lay had been swarming with rats. They were wild, bold, and starving. Their red eyes glared at me. They were waiting for me to lie still so that they could make me their prey. To what food have they been used to in the well, I wondered. They had already eaten all but a little of the food in the dish. I had waved my hand about the dish to move them away. After a while, it no longer had an effect. Their hunger forced them to sink their sharp fangs in my fingers. I grabbed whatever was left of the food, and I rubbed it into the band around me wherever I could reach it. Then I lay as still as I could. At first, the starving rats were startled at the change. Many shrank back. Some went down into the well. But this was only for a moment. I knew their hunger would bring them back. One or two of them jumped upon the framework and smelled the band. That seemed to be a signal for a general rush. Fresh troops hurried up from the well. They clung to the wood. They overran it and leaped in hundreds upon my body. The steady movement of the pendulum didn't disturb them at all. They avoided its strokes and busied themselves with the band. They swarmed upon me in greater and greater numbers. They covered my throat. Their cold lips touched mine. Disgust chilled my heart. In a minute, I felt the struggle would be over. I could plainly feel the loosening of the band. I knew that in more than one place it must already be cut. I struggled to keep still. Finally, I felt that I was free. The band hung in pieces from my body. But the stroke of the pendulum already pressed upon my chest. Twice again it swung. A sharp pain shot through every nerve. But the moment of escape had arrived. At a wave of my hand, the rats hurried away. I moved carefully, sideways and slowly, out of the bonds. I was beyond the reach of the blade. For the moment, at least, I was free. Free! But in the grasp of the Inquisition. I took a small step from my bed of horror. Then the movement of the hellish machine stopped. I watched as it was pulled up by an invisible force through the ceiling. This was a sign I took to heart. My every move was being watched. I had escaped death by one form of torture, only to suffer a worse death by another. With that thought, I rolled my eyes to the iron walls that closed me in. Some change, which I could not at first figure out, had taken place. For many minutes I was in a dreamy state, trying to guess what had happened. During this time, I learned where the dim glow that lighted the cell was coming from. It came from a crack, about a half inch wide. This crack ran around the entire prison at the base of the walls. These walls appeared to be entirely separated from the floor. I struggled, without success, to look through the opening. As I got up, I at once solved the mystery of the change in the cell. I have already mentioned the pictures painted on the walls. Before, the colors had seemed blurred and unclear. Now these colors were very sharp and bright. Demon eyes of a wild and awful nature glared at me from every direction. What now? I began to smell the odor of hot iron. I gasped for breath. There was no doubt about the plan of my persecutors. I shrank from the glowing metal to the center of the cell. I thought of the fiery death that was in store for me. The idea of the coolness of the well calmed my soul. I rushed to its deadly edge. I strained my eyes to look below. The glare from the glowing roof lighted it to its deepest part. Yet, for a moment, my mind did not understand what it saw. Finally, it forced itself into my soul. Oh, horror! Any horror but this! I rushed from the edge and buried my face in my hands, weeping bitterly. The heat quickly increased. Once again I looked up, shaking as if I had a fever. There had been a second change in the cell. This time the change was in the form. My attempts to escape had hurried my torturers. There was to be no more delay. The room had once been square. Now the cell continued to change shape quickly with a low rumbling sound. Suddenly it became shaped like a diamond. But the change did not stop here, and I neither hoped nor wished it to stop. Death, I said, any death but that of the pit. Fool. I might have known that the object of the burning iron was to urge me into the pit. Could I bear the heat? Could I bear the pressure? And now, flatter and flatter grew the cell. It was happening so quickly I had no time to think. Its center, its greatest width, was just over the terrible opening. I shrank back, but the closing walls pressed me onward. Finally, there was no longer an inch of foothold on the prison floor. I struggled no more. But the pain of my soul was set free in one loud, long, final scream. I felt that I was on the edge. I turned my eyes away. There was a strange hum of human voices. There was a loud blast of many trumpets. There was a constant booming of a thousand thunders. The fiery walls rushed back. An outstretched arm caught my own as I fell into the well. It was the arm of General LaSalle. The French army had entered Toledo. The Inquisition was in the hands of its enemies. I was saved. The Black Cat. I do not expect you to believe the wild tale I am about to write. I would have to be mad to expect it. Yet mad I am not. And surely I do not dream. But tomorrow I die, and today I would like to cleanse my soul. My purpose now is to place before the world a series of simple household events. These events have terrified, tortured, and destroyed me. Yet I will not try to explain them. Later, perhaps, someone smarter and calmer than I can do that. And that person will see in these events the natural result of causes and effects. From my very early years, I was known for my gentle and pleasant nature. I was especially fond of animals. My parents supplied me with many different kinds of pets. I spent much time with them and was happiest when I was feeding and petting them. My love for animals continued as I grew up. I married young, and I was happy to find that my wife had a similar nature to my own. When she saw my liking for household pets, she wasted no time getting us some. We had birds, goldfish, a fine dog, rabbits, a small monkey, and a cat. The cat was a very large and beautiful black one, and he was wise to an amazing degree. When speaking of his intelligence, my wife often mentioned an old popular belief. This belief held that all black cats were witches in disguise. She was never serious about this point, however. I mention this only because I happen to remember it just now. The cat's name was Pluto. He was my favorite pet. I alone fed him, and he followed me wherever I went around the house. He often even tried to follow me when I left the house. Our friendship lasted this way for several years. During this time, however, my general nature was changing for the worse. The cause of this, I hate to admit, was due to the use of strong drink. Day by day, I grew more moody. I cared less and less about the feelings of others. I began to use foul language to my wife, and sometimes even struck her. My pets, of course, began to feel the change in me. I not only neglected them, but treated them badly. Pluto was an exception. I still had enough feeling for him so as not to mistreat him. But nothing stopped me from mistreating the others when they got in my way. However, my disease grew worse. For what disease is like alcohol? Finally, even Pluto began to feel the effects of my bad temper. One night, I returned home very drunk. When I thought the cat was avoiding me, I grabbed him. He became frightened and gave me a slight wound upon my hand with his teeth. The fury of a demon suddenly came over me. I no longer knew myself. My original soul seemed at once to leave my body. The evil effects of alcohol filled every bone in me. I took from my coat pocket a penknife and opened it. I grabbed the beast by the throat and cut one of its eyes from the socket. I shudder as I describe this horrible crime. My reason returned in the morning when I had slept off the night's drink. I experienced both horror and sorrow for what I had done. But it was at best a weak, mixed feeling, and I remained unchanged. Once again, I plunged into drinking, and the memory of the deed became drowned in wine. In the meantime, the cat slowly recovered. The eye socket, it's true, looked awful, but he no longer appeared to suffer any pain. He went about the house as usual. As might be expected, however, he ran in terror whenever I came near. At first, I was hurt that a creature who had once loved me now disliked me so much. But this feeling soon gave way to annoyance. One morning, I slipped a noose around its neck and hung it from a tree. I hung it with tears streaming from my eyes and with bitter sorrow at my heart. I hung it because I knew that it had loved me, and because I knew I had no reason to do so. That night, I was awakened from sleep by the cry of fire. The curtains of my bed were in flames. The whole house was blazing. My wife, my servant, and myself escaped with great difficulty. The destruction was complete. My entire worldly wealth burned to the ground. On the day after the fire, I visited the ruins. The walls, with one exception, had fallen in. This exception was a wall in the middle of the house where the head of my bed had rested. This wall had not burned as the others because it had been recently plastered. A big crowd surrounded the wall. Many people seemed to be looking at a certain part of it very closely. Hearing the words strange and odd made me curious. I went nearer and saw the figure of a gigantic cat with a rope around its neck. When I first saw this sight, I was terrified. When I thought more about it, I felt better. I remembered that the cat had been hung in a garden next to the house. When the cry of fire had been heard, the garden had quickly filled with people. Someone must have cut the animal loose and thrown it through an open window into my room. Perhaps this had been done to wake me up. The falling of the other walls had pressed the cat into the newly laid plaster, and so the picture had been made. While this explained the event, it still bothered me. For months, I could not get rid of the sight of the cat. During this time, I also began to experience a feeling that seemed, but wasn't, sorrow for what I had done. I even began to feel regret for the loss of the animal. I started to look about the places I now visited for another cat to take its place. One night, I sat half drunk in an evil pub, when my attention was drawn to a black object. It sat on one of the large barrels of gin or rum. I went up to it and touched it with my hand. It was a black cat. It was as large as Pluto, and it looked like him in every way but one. Pluto did not have a white hair on his whole body. This cat had a large spot of white covering almost his entire breast. When I touched him, he quickly rose. He purred loudly, rubbed against my hand, and appeared delighted with me. This, then, was the very animal I was searching for. I offered to buy it from the landlord, but he knew nothing of the cat and had never seen it before. When I left to go home, the animal followed me. I allowed it to do so. When it reached the house, it made itself right at home and became a favorite with my wife right away. As for me, I soon began to dislike it. This was just the opposite of what I had expected. It seemed that its fondness for me caused me to feel disgusted and annoyed. I avoided the creature. A sense of shame from my earlier crime stopped me from hurting it. For some weeks, I did not injure it in any way. But slowly I came to look upon it with a deep hatred. One thing added to my hatred of the beast. That was a discovery I had made on the morning after I had brought it home. This cat, like Pluto, had lost one of its eyes. This fact had made my wife even more fond of the animal. Her nature was marked by a great gentleness and kindness. The more I disliked the cat, however, the more it seemed to like me. Wherever I sat, it would crouch under my chair. If I got up to walk, it would get between my feet and nearly trip me. At such times, I wished to destroy it with a single blow. I was stopped from doing so partly by the memory of my earlier crime, but mostly by an absolute dread of the beast. It is hard to say what this dread was. I am almost ashamed to say, yes, even in this prison cell, I am ashamed to say what caused this dread. My wife had mentioned more than once the white spot on the animal's breast. The shape of this spot had begun to slowly change. It changed so slowly that at first I thought I was only imagining it. Finally, it began to take a definite shape. It now looked like an object which I shudder to name. It was the image of a horrible noose. For this, above all, I dreaded the animal and would have killed the monster had I dared. I knew no rest, either by day or night. During the day, the creature would not leave me alone. At night, I often had terrible dreams. When I woke, the hot breath of the thing was upon my face, and its huge weight was always upon my heart. Under these pressures, the little good that was left in me disappeared. I began to hate all things and all people. Throughout all this, my kind and gentle wife suffered the worst of it. One day, she went with me on some household errand. We went into the cellar of the old building we now lived in. The cat followed me down the stairs. When it nearly caused me to fall, I became enraged. I picked up an axe and aimed a blow at the animal. If I had struck it, the cat would certainly have died. But the blow was stopped by my wife's hand. I was furious because she interfered. I withdrew my arm from her hold and buried the axe in her brain. She fell dead upon the spot without a groan. The awful murder was done with. Now I had to go about the job of hiding the body. I knew I could not remove it from the house, either by day or night. I could not risk being seen by the neighbors. I thought about many different ways of doing it. Finally, I came up with what I thought was a very good plan. I would wall the body up in the cellar. The cellar was perfect for what I had in mind. Its walls were loosely built. They had recently been plastered, and the damp air kept the rough plaster from getting hard. In addition, there was a fireplace that had been filled up and made to look like the rest of the cellar. I knew I could remove some bricks, place the corpse inside, and then replace the bricks. No eye would be able to see anything suspicious. I used a crowbar to remove the bricks. I carefully placed the body, standing up, against the inner wall. Then I relaid the whole structure as it originally stood. When I finished, I was satisfied that all was right. My next step was to look for the beast who had been the cause of so much misery. I had firmly decided to put it to death. However, the smart animal had been scared off by my violence. It had disappeared. It is impossible to describe the deep joy I felt by the hated creature's absence. It did not return during the night, so, for one night at least, I slept soundly, even with the burden of murder upon my soul. The second and third day passed, and still the hated beast did not come. The monster, in terror, had fled the house forever. My happiness was complete. The guilt of my dark deed bothered me very little. A few questions had been asked, but they had been easily answered. A search had even been conducted, but of course nothing was discovered. I thought my future was safe. On the fourth day, the police came once again to investigate. I was not worried, however. The officers asked me to accompany them in their search. For the third or fourth time, they went into the cellar. I was calm. I walked back and forth freely. The police were fully satisfied and ready to leave. The joy at my heart was too much to hold in. I had to say one word, in triumph, to leave them no doubt of my innocence. "By the way, gentlemen," I said as they turned to go up the steps, "this is a very well-built house. These walls are solidly put together." Here I rapped heavily with a cane upon the very spot in the wall behind which stood the corpse of my wife. May God protect me from the fangs of the devil. As soon as the sound from my blows had stopped, I was answered by a voice from within the tomb. It was a cry, at first muffled and broken. Then quickly it grew into one long, loud scream. It wasn't human. It was a howl of horror and of triumph. I swooned and staggered to the opposite wall. At first, the police didn't move out of terror. Then a dozen arms were clawing at the wall. It fell heavily. The corpse, already decaying, stood straight up before the eyes of the police. Upon its head, with a red, wide-open mouth and one eye of fire, sat the awful beast. The beast who had caused me to murder, and whose voice had now sentenced me to hang. I had walled the monster up within the tomb.